Baroness Lashini was up before the dawn. She had three Sekhmen riding with her in the wag. The vehicle was shiny, big, and black, and although it was missing two of its four doors, it was still an impressive thing. Spike's two-wheeled wag had been serviced by the Baroness's mechanics and had been topped up with alcohol.
Ready to go?
The Baroness leaned up against her wag and moved her head in the direction of one of her Sekhmen.
See that guy over there? His name is Slade. I wanted you to meet him before we headed out.
Slade was a big and dirty man with long, scraggly hair and several missing teeth. The Baroness nodded in the man's direction.
He's carrying a Gewehr 43. Ever heard of that make of blaster?
Spike shook his head.
Of course you haven't. With that sight on top, it's an excellent sniper's weapon. So if you think we'll just rumble out into the Deathlands and you'll take off on that little machine of yours, just remember that Slade here is good with the blaster and will blow a hole through your head before you're able to put 20 yards between you and my wag.
The messenger swallowed and licked his lips. The Baroness smiled sardonically.
Do you understand?
Yes, Baroness. I understand.
I thought you might. All right, then. Let's move out.
Twenty minutes after the Baroness and the messenger had left Indyville, Sec Chief Viviani gathered together a group of six wags and led them out of the ville. Five of the wags carried Sekhmen, while the sixth vehicle was a war wag with a .303 caliber machine blaster on a swivel mount. Their plan was simple. Baroness Lashini would get inside Demand's complex. When the Baron was told that his guest was the same outlander who murdered his brother, he'd become incensed. Then, while Baron Demand was busy getting rid of the outlanders, Sec Chief Viviani would enter the ville and take it over from the inside. It was going to be a bloody firefight, but Baroness Lashini had had her eye on Demand's operation for years, and this seemed like the best time to make her move. She had the blasters, the element of surprise, and six outlanders who would be keeping Demand's Sekhmen busy while Baroness Lashini took control of the ville. Sec Chief Viviani smiled at the thought of his Baroness's plan. With the Baroness taking over from Demand, it would leave him as the second in command who would control Indyville for Baroness Lashini. How long would it take, he wondered, to take full control of the ville and have Lashini chilled? It was an interesting thought, one that kept the Sec Chief's mind occupied for almost the entire journey. Eleander led the friends to the kitchen, where several people were already busy serving breakfast to the Baron's Sec Force. They were each given a bowl of what looked like cornmeal, a slice of bread, and cup of water flavored with fruit juice. JB cleaned the bottom of his bowl with his slice of bread.
Not great, but not bad.
Had worse. A lot worse.
I don't think this is what Jack had in mind when I mentioned breakfast, but I don't think he'll complain.
As the friends made small talk, several of the Sekhmen seemed to grow interested in their conversation. The previous night's episode at the Wall hadn't made Ryan and the others any friends among the Ville's Sec Force, and it seemed the Sekhmen were looking for a reason to start a fight. One of the Sekhmen came up to them, a dirty, blonde-haired man with a thick beard and big nose. What few teeth remained in his mouth were yellow and rotting.
Something wrong with your food?
On the contrary, my hirsute friend. We have not had gruel this good in months. I'm tempted to ask for seconds.
The sick man was moving closer to the group of friends.
You got a smart mouth, old man.
I shall take that as a compliment, but while I appreciate being called smart, my mouth merely says what my brain tells it. So, in fact, what you are saying is that my brain is smart, and I have known that for many years. Thank you.
The Sec man continued to approach Doc, his hand on the butt of his blaster. Ryan watched the Sec man closely, taking out his Sig Sauer and keeping it concealed under the table in case he needed to use it in a hurry. Around the table, he knew that the rest of the friends were doing the exact same thing.
You've got a big mouth, too, I see.
No larger than most. Over the years, I have found it to be large enough to allow sufficient quantities of food in and a sufficient number of words out. Some might say more than a sufficient number of words, but I have never had any trouble making myself understood.
Everyone in the room seemed to be on triple alert, and the situation was seconds away from erupting into a firefight.
You think you're all better than us. You think you're something special, don't you?
Eleander moved to get up from the table, but Doc put his hand on her shoulder to keep her seated at his side.
Better? Not at all. But, my good Sec-man, I do happen to be a very special human being. Several hundred years old, as a matter of fact.
The Sec-man stared at Doc with a confused look on his face, as if he wasn't sure if he should laugh or be insulted.
I was alive when your great-great-great-grandfather was still in diapers, and the world was a much kinder and gentler place.
A couple of Sec-men at the tables laughed, but it turned out that the Sec-man confronting Doc had no sense of humor.
I've had about as much bullshit from you as I can stand, old man.
He reached forward with a clenched fist. Ryan and the rest of the friends raised their weapons and aimed them at the charging Sec-man. The other Sec-man also had their weapons out, each one leveled at Doc's head. But rather than pulling out his lama, Doc unsheathed his sword stick and held the blade horizontally before him in the path of the charging Sec-man. The Sec-man stopped in his tracks, as if the blade was a line in the sand that would bring dire consequences if crossed. For a moment, the room was deathly silent, neither side wanting to make the next move, a move which would undoubtedly end up with people getting chilled on both sides.
Put the blasters away.
Ryan and the others turned to see the Baron standing in the doorway.
I'm happy to see tensions running high. A genuine dislike of the opposition will make for a great game this afternoon.
Blasters were lowered, then replaced in their holsters. The Sec-man taunting Doc didn't look like he was mollified, however.
Lindsley, save it for later.
The Sec-man took several steps backward, but never took his eyes off Doc.
Yes, Baron.
Doc nodded to the man, then put away his blade.
I look forward to testing our skills in good-natured sporting competition.
Lindsley turned and joined the other Sec-man at the table without another word.
Did you really mean what you said, Theo?
About what, my dear?
About being hundreds of years old.
How old do you think I am?
Not a day over 59.
Oh, you're very kind. But I've always believed that you are as young as you feel, and while my actual age can at times be the subject of great debate, you have made me feel positively young again.
Would you like to go for a walk or a tour of the production facilities?
Yes, I would like that. I would like that very much.
As the other companions feasted on the breakfast that morning, Mildred checked on Jack and found he was doing better. He was still a little hot, but the wound looked to be healing nicely. She stretched out the stiffness that the night on the cot had given her.
Hungry?
Could eat horse.
The Baron's got plenty of things. But I haven't seen one of those yet. You'll have to settle for this.
She brought the injured Tina's breakfast.
What is?
It's cornmeal, sort of. It'll make you stronger.
Jack took a spoon of the gruel and sampled it. Then he shook his head, making sure not to move his shoulder too much.
What's wrong?
Not taste like chicken.
Mildred just looked at him funny. And then Jack smiled and continued to eat. Ryan, JB, and Christy went to the game arena after breakfast to check the setup and develop a battle plan for beating the Baron Sec-men. JB paced out the arena and learned it was roughly 30 yards wide and 70 yards long. The wall around it was chest high and was curved evenly in each of the corners. The dirt floor surface of the arena was dissected by several lines crossing the width of it in the middle and almost at the midway point between the middle and each end. Apparently, the center of the arena was a neutral zone, while each end was either a defending zone or an attacking zone, depending on which team you were on. There were also several obstacles strewed about the arena floor, such as concrete walls, burned-out wags, and trapdoors set into the floor, some of which led under the arena and connected with other trapdoors, and some which led a few feet and then stopped abruptly at a dead end, making the trapdoors aptly named. Exits were situated at each of the four corners and led out into the ville. Finally, on the south side of the arena was a line of targets, the splatters of which they'd seen from the wag when they'd entered the ville. On the other side of the arena was a line of stalls where the Sec-men stood while shooting at the targets. Christie gave a black hulk of a wag a push with her boot, only to discover that the thing still rolled on its wheels.
It's like the ruins of a rad-blasted ville.
Been in places like this plenty of times before, only it was no game.
Let's check all of the trapdoors. I want to know where all of them lead. And I want to know where these exits go, too, just in case we have to use one to get away.
Expecting trouble, lover?
Ryan shook his head.
Are you?
Christie was silent, searching her feelings for any hint that they were in danger.
Nothing.
Then I'm just being cautious. If we're going to play this game, then we might as well play to win, and take as much ammo with us when we leave as we can.
Go hard or go home.
You think we might lose?
Not a chance.